Record button. And we're live. So, hey, folks, this is Walt with Hazard Studio and the Banff Podcast for Indie Creators Spotlight. Today, we have a man we've been trying to hunt down for some time. And because his world is made of tissue paper, he's blasting through all obstacles. And he's coming to us today to talk a little bit about himself and his creations. Mr. Vince White, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Walt.
We really appreciate it. We missed you the last time, but now that we got you, we're going to hold on for the full ride and see what we can get into. So this is your life in comics, only without the goofy voices, hopefully. And so I'm going to start off with the number one question I feel is the most important aspect of every interview is, when you got into comics, did it start from a spinner rack at a convenience store, or did you actually go to a comic shop?
You know, I think it goes back to my brother. My older brother had comics that he collected and he kept under his bed in a shoebox. And, you know, I was born in the 70s. So these were like the Master of Kung Fu, Dracula, the Invincible Iron Man. And man, I didn't know how to read because I was young. I was real young. And he did not allow me to touch these comic books. And every time, but I couldn't resist. So every time he'd catch me, he'd freaking put me in a headlock and do that little knuckle thing on your head. But that's what got me into it, man. And Sunday morning comic strips and Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, on your bio page, you mentioned some super properties that are fan favorites, Thundercats, and Thundercats, you know, yes. I'm sure you saw the Silverhawks and all those those lines. Yes. Oh, you even got the lines down. What was your favorite from back then?
Man, Robotech awakened me to an adult form of storytelling. I know it was like the Americanized version of the Japanese anime, and they put like an American style storytelling. And from what I understand, it wasn't even an original Japanese story, but you know, they did a more familiar story archetype for the American audience. And I love that, but I'd have to say Thundercats, Voltron back in the day, they were all equally good. Gosh, if you could only live with one, it would have to be Thundercats and then Silverhawks. I even liked the Thundersharks.
Oh my God, I remember those things. Oh my God. And then what are you thinking of the have you seen the new Voltron series yet?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's nice. It's lovely. I love how they modernized it. The characters are really fleshed out well. I don't like their adventures as much where they get separated. You know, I understand that it's for character development and to show that they can do more outside of the lines as well. But I really do like when they come up against their main nemesis, when they form and fight. I like the fact that you're finding more about the mythology of the characters and their, I forgot what they're called, like their weapons. I forget what they're called, but it's really cool. You know, they get more and more to that. That would be amazing. You know, where did the heck the lions come from? What were they? What inspired these people to create them? That's what I want to know. Yeah.
Right on. Now going back to the shoebox where the comics lived, where did you grow up to share that space with the shoebox?
Right in Virginia, Denby, which is like a Newport News subsidiary, sort of. Newport News, Virginia. I grew up here, and I had a very classic childhood, and it was like the thing. What was that movie where the guy had the Daisy rifle? I forget what it's
called. Oh, the Christmas Story.
Yes. I mean, that was my childhood. That was my childhood. You know, it was, we celebrated all the holidays. The house was decorated for every holiday. You know, we tried to see if our tongues would stick to the cold metal when it snowed, all that stuff, you know. and comic books. And, you know, I mean, back then they were like, what, 25 cent a pop, newsprint, most beautiful thing you ever saw. Yeah, it was really awesome.
Yeah, you didn't happen to shoot your eye out, did you?
No, but I did shoot my brother and his calf. I did have a Dixie. I had an air rifle and all that. I shot him a calf. I remember that.
Yeah. Right on. So at what point did you decide to comics was a thing for you? Like, did you stay with comics the whole time? Did you do what some of us did and, you know, said, why am I looking at X-Men comics when I can hang out with real girls? I mean,
I think my fascination was with comic strips initially. You know, back then, Sunday cartoons in the newspaper was a big thing. Garfield was blowing up. Bloom County, Doomsbury. You know, all those cartoons or comic strips were really big. Ziggy, you would buy all the paraphernalia, I guess, all the external property or content and stuff you could get. Like, they had the stuffed animals, you know, you had the calendars, all types of stuff for your desk, and, you know, all these Chotskys and stuff like that. And my brother was actually a better artist than I was, and he actually got noticed by a local newspaper, and then we got to meet the artist of a comic strip called Flegel. And it just blew my mind. I think I was like 9 or 10. And we got to go to his house. We saw his studio. And this guy sat and he drew comic strips for a living. And it blew my mind. And I wanted to always do a comic strip. And I'll tell you why that has such a great experience and why it helped me with comic strips. Because when you can condense a story down to 4 panels, you start to learn all the tricks, no matter if you're a great artist or not. You start to understand silhouettes. Some panels are silhouettes. You start to understand how to make some panels far away, some close up, because you only have so many panels to communicate movement in. And you understand the importance of word bubbles, how to place them, and the importance of lettering. And so by the time my fascination switched into comic books, my comic books, even though I was drawing like on line paper and they were cheesy comic books, they looked better than my peers because I had a better understanding of the panel and because of the comic strip fascination from earlier.
Right on. When you got only so much space to work with, you know, every piece of the panel that you're working with is like solid gold and you don't want to waste it.
Exactly.
When did you start getting into drawing? And, you know, you said you were, you know, drawing on line paper and stuff like that. Did you do what some of us did and started, being a thing, did you start like folding it in half and creating ash cans and all that stuff?
sort of. What happened was I always liked art. And then when I graduated high school, I joined the military. I joined the Navy. And I guess that was really when I got introduced to comic books again as an adult. And, you know, you're out at sea for like, you know, 6 months at a time. There's nothing to do. And one of my buddies had some comic books. Hey, if you're bored, why don't you read this? So reading those, I was like, wow, you know, as an adult, you can appreciate what you saw as a child, but you see the depth of it now. And I was like, man, this is really interesting. I always considered myself a storyteller. And I was like, man, I would really like to tell stories in this format. So when I got out the Navy, I just started to pursue that art career a little more. And I guess I didn't do much of the ash cans, but because I was older and I was kind of more proficient at it already. But so that's really what got me into it, reading in the Navy and trying to see if I could do that myself. So.
Right on, man. That's awesome. First of all, thank you for your service. Anytime we have a service member on here, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate what you guys do, and if I turned my camera, you could see my American flag in the background. But thank you so much. Anytime anybody puts it on the line, that's awesome. When you were on float, the motions of the sea make you a more steady hand when you're on land?
Yeah, I think so, man. Look, you know, all that time you have, you can think of story idea after story idea, and then you're surrounded by the same people every day. So if they have any type of similar interest, right, all to pass the time, you're going to talk about that subject. And so, I mean, that kindled a lot of ideas. I got during high school I started playing Dungeons and Dragons, and which was translated into like champions and heroes. And then in the military, we weren't really into that so much, but it was a common bond that a lot of the guys shared. You know, we were like geeks in the military, but it just gave me a lot of it validated a lot of my inner thoughts about being a creator and being an artist and having the ability to generate ideas that were outside the box. So
right on.
Yeah.
So nowadays, obviously you have quite an interesting style. Love the look of your characters. I love you have nice, crisp, clean artwork. So I mean that's So
thank you, man. More of that. I like to hear more of that. No.
Are you doing hand drawn on paper or board and then going to digital, or are you going all digital? How are you translating these days?
I'm just now transitioning to all digital, and I've had a digital tablet now for about 6 months, and just the other day I was telling my girlfriend, I said, you know what? I think I got it. And there is a bell curve. You're trying to draw as though it's regular paper. You're drawing at the same proportion and ratio. But what you really need to do, you have to pull in very close. When you're drawing digital, you have to pull in very close. It's like the opposite of drawing a comic, because you're drawing on like 11 by 17 and you're drawing big so that when it's reduced, the line quality is crisp so that the rigidness of the line is not as viewable once it's reduced. But on a digital pad, you have to zoom in close, and it is, I guess, paralleling the concept of a bigger paper because you're so close in on it so that the line looks crisp. If you're trying to draw it far away, it's really shaky. The line quality is terrible. The art looks bad. And I didn't understand that. It took me a while to figure this out. And the pressure of the pen and then how to throw the line left and right on a smooth glass surface. But now I think I got it. And I see me increasing in. Yeah, it's kind of cool to see that.
Right on, man. What size board are you working on for digital?
Right now, I have a 19-inch Huion, Huion.
I have one right over the side that my cat is laying on.
Okay, I have a cat too, and you know what? But thank goodness that she can't get on this tablet. She can get all on the paper, before she'll walk on or whatever, but. I'm actually liking it. I might get a larger size. My girlfriend doesn't know, but I might get a large. I'm looking at that 22. I want to have a desk that just is a whole digital desk, Yeah.
Fantastic. So I'd like to start transitioning and talking about Will and the Powerverse, because obviously you just had a successful Kickstarter, 247 backers. You're going to be able to bring the Powerverse to life. So let's start with Will. Let's start with what I consider the most iconic superhero origin story ever, because I mean. Let's call a spade a spade. We've had radioactive spiders. We've had interdimensional taxi cabs. We've had you name it. There's been that, but the change is always to the character, and never to the environment. Can you talk about where Will started and how you came up with Will, and how that translated into the first comic?
The story is sort of twofold. I really wanted to do something. I really wanted to make the iconic character for the next generation. I wanted to make the equivalent of the next Superman. And I realized that I have this thing called the icon equation. We might talk about it some more, but the icon equation is something I developed after looking at comics and trying to figure out what makes, what makes some of the most iconic characters iconic. You know, there's a reason, like if you go to any country and ask them names, you know, maybe four or five superheroes, their top four or five is going to be like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, whatever. And I'm wondering, why aren't they saying Cable or Nightcrawler or, you know, any other heroes? You know, why aren't they seeing those guys? And so I figured out what those attributes were. I came up with 19, and I called those the icon equation. Now I can share some of those with you, but I took those and I applied them to Will. So if, for those who don't know the story of Willpower, the legend of Willpower, He never really gets any powers. It's the universe that changes. And how that happens is basically the entire universe becomes less dense. And you have to read the story to see how, because it's a nice little ride of how it happens. And he's the only one that remains the same. So almost like the Matrix. The Matrix sort of eludes to the possibility that we're all in the Matrix. Even this conversation is happening in the Matrix, but we don't know it. So this event that changed the density of matter happened universally. And so none of us really realized it because it happened to all of us. So, and at the same ratio, so a wall is still a wall to us and everything else, but if it didn't happen to him and he remained the same density, then everything in existence is like paper thin to him, including all the laws of physics, you know, everything that we hold true. So I call them unpowers. he is like the densest thing alive. And that really comes from my fascination with Superman. And I wrote a story about Superman that was rejected, but I think it's the best story ever. And I don't know if we have time to share it, but it takes about 4 or 5 minutes to tell. But it's from that story that I got the Legend of Willpower.
If you wanna regale us with more fiction, this is what this show is about. Let's go, let's do it.
Well. I love Superman. You know, I might not read his books, excuse me, but I love the character himself, right? And so I was trying to figure out how did this guy start off? I think he was faster than the speeding bullet, stronger than a locomotive, and able to leap buildings in a single bound, right? So how did he go from that to having laser vision, flying, existing in space, you know, dying, coming back to life? How do you gain all these other abilities? And no one explained it. This is like this big mystery of comics, and no one has ever taken the time to explain it. And so I wanted to write a story that explained that. And how it started off was he's standing in space. He's looking at the Earth erupting, boom, boom, all these little eruptions. And these angels are flying past him, holding the souls of man. And they're flying into like this white light. They're taking the perished souls, or the those who have died in these explosions, to their final resting place. And so, and once again, in the fear of being left alone, he cries out to the angels. He says, "What about me?" And they say, "Oh," the angels stop and sing in chorus, "You're not of this world. Your soul doesn't belong to us." And they disappear in the white light, and Earth explodes. Boom. And then he wakes up, and it was a dream. And so in the middle of the night, he flies out, he goes to a church, and he kneels down before the altar, and he prays. And he says, it's like the first time the most powerful man in the universe seeks God, right? And he says, "You know, Lord, what is to happen to my soul?" And then he hears this voice that says, "I'm afraid this day would come." And he looks like, "Oh God, is God talking to me?" But it's not, it's the specter. And the specter can read men's souls. So I came up with this mechanism to explain the specter's powers, that he reads the aura of men. Like, you know, we all emit a certain amount of frequency from our bodies, body heat, whatever. And he tells Superman, he says, "You know, the residual energy that people produce, we call auras and halos, and I read them. But you use every ounce of energy your body creates. You have no waste. So there's nothing for me to read. I can't tell you your future. But I want to know, do you know about your people?" So he starts thinking, do I know about my people? So to make a long story short, he goes to Krypton and tries to find out about his people. And amidst the rubble there, in space, he cries out to the universe, and the universe answers. And it says, "In the beginning, God gave man a choice between faith or knowledge. He chose to take from the tree of knowledge. But in the beginning, God gave the Kryptonians a similar choice between faith or destiny. And they chose the ability to control their destiny. Through their will, they can control their destiny. So they created massive civilization. They conquered sickness and disease. They were even beating death itself, because whatever they willed, whatever they put their mind to and willed, it became their destiny. So they began to think that they were gods. And if they began to think it, they would then soon thereafter be gods. And the great source, the great creator, couldn't have that. He couldn't have them usurp him and take him out of the picture. So he is the reason God himself, the great creator, destroyed Krypton. He wiped out Krypton, and he allowed one of those people to be spared. That was Superman. And his power is that whatever his will is applied to, it will be. So if he believes he can leap a building in a single bound, it will happen. If he believes he can fly, it will be so. If he believes he can fly around the Earth and spend time backwards to save Lois Lane, it will happen, right? Or if he dies and he believes he can come back from the dead, it will happen. So it explains everything. It explains Superman's power. And I later said they took that power of the will and they gave it to the guys that control the Green Lantern Corps. And they put it in the lanterns and dispersed it out as rings. And so he was asking, he said, "Well, why does kryptonite affect me? If my will can overcome anything, why does kryptonite affect me?" And it basically says, because that's cursed earth. It was struck down by the wrath of God. And when you come in touch with it, you suffer the same wrath as your people suffer. So I thought I wrote this awesome story. And I was like, dude, this is awesome. DC said it was too religious. It sucks.
I don't know. So I was kind of getting a little, I was getting goosebumps in the back of my neck for a minute there. I was like, oh, this is pretty damn cool.
Yeah, man. It was called Superman Between Faith and Destiny. And they didn't like it at all. I was like, oh, I'm explaining your character to you. Do you get so I just said, you know what?
Awesome,
I'm going to take that energy and put it into my own creation. And so I came up with The Legend of Willpower.
So how long has Will been hanging out with you? I talked to a lot of creators, and they usually their creations usually start somewhere in junior high school. Has Will been around that long, or did he start later on in life?
Yeah, he started on later on in life. He's not one of those old things. I actually created him using the icon equation, using everything I learned. And he first popped in my mind, I think, in 2006. And I didn't really do anything with him. I drew him, but I didn't do anything with him until 2011. And that's when I put out the first, really, it was like an ash can. And people liked it. They liked the concept. They liked how it was so different. And so I quickly put out about two or three more issues. And I got a writer's block per se, but I was afraid of committing to this one concept that I had in the story. So I waited almost a year. I took like a year off in hiatus. And then I put out the next issue, which was issue 5. And built inside The Legend of Willpower is the mechanism to create a universe. Which brought me to thinking, well, is it time to actually create the Powerverse? And so I thought it was time. And so I started reaching out and networking to create the Powerverse. And I finally launched it in February, and via Kickstarter, which had a pretty good reception. So. So now we're at the Powerverse, baby.
And folks who go to your website, which is willpowercomic.com, they can go to your shop and peruse a bunch of different comics. We have Willpower. We have the Action Pack. We have. Purge, which I was excited to see on there, because it's a fun little thing. But you can also pick up your book on the Icon Equation. So when did you decide to write, you know, write down the 19 different iconic makes a great character?
Well, I've been toying around with for really 20 years. And I used to talk about it a lot, and people used to think I was crazy. And then I just started I started to write it 3 years ago? So let me actually put it down so I can communicate this to others. And I started writing it 3 years ago. I sort of wrapped up the first draft like last year, and I might be adding another addition to it, or updating it again. And just to give you a part or a piece of it, what should I do? What part should I talk about? well, you know, superheroes are really, I'll talk about the icon of. There's an attribute or a chapter called the icon of. And superheroes are really, when you think about it, American fantasy. They are our mythology. And, you know, mythologies represent like the social subconscious of that culture. They are the embodiment of certain ideals or aspirations that culture as a whole permeates or it lives within or whatever. So, you know, like the Japanese, I always get this confused, Japanese and Chinese, the Asian cultures have like their version of dragons, shoguns, ninjas, that type of stuff. You have like the European cultures, they have their knights of the round table, dragons, giants. Irish have like leprechauns and fairies. And the Americas, you know, we have superheroes. Why? Because whether it's true or not, we really believe that one man can make a difference. That one man can pull himself up by his bootstraps and take on unsurmountable odds and make a difference. You know, we have a revolutionary mindset. And that superheroes embody that. So once you realize you're writing lore, and that's one of the big differences. People just write comic books and not realizing they're writing lore. Okay, but the icon of is this. When you have like your, on your computer, you have all this data that's broken down into binary ones and zeros. And there's a process where you no longer want to use this collection of ones and zeros. And so you want to take this collection of ones and zeros, move them to another part of your hard drive, partition it so you can't access it. And then you want to have it there in a semi-stasis-like state until you decide you really want to wipe it off. Now, that process we have distilled down to one icon on your desktop. It's called the trash can. Okay, so that little icon is the embodiment of that entire complex concept. So what heroes are icons of some very complex concept. And once you understand what your hero is the icon of, then you can write, design, and create your hero to that iconic concept. And to give further example, I'll make this real quick. Daredevil is the icon of fearlessness because he's blind, he can't see. And so a lot of times we're afraid of what we see. And if you realize that he is the icon of fearlessness, if you want to look up fearlessness on your desktop, you click the icon of Daredevil. Click the, it opens up everything fearlessness, right? So how does that translate into the story? Well, I immediately see a scene where Matt Murdock is walking with his assistant down a busy New York sidewalk. Traffic is going, people are walking, and he comes to an intersection and the light turns red. So he shouldn't cross, but he keeps going. He walks out in traffic, all the cars skid and skirt. He walks to the other side. He stops, turns around and looks at his assistant and says, "Aren't you coming?" Because he's fearlessness. And once you understand that is what he's the icon of, it should be put into every scene, panel, and everything that he does. And that's what makes that character so iconic, because he becomes the archetype of fearlessness. Just like Superman is the archetype and icon of hope. And Batman is like vengeance and justice. And when you see a character floundering, it's because the creator doesn't know what the character is actually the embodiment of. And so the icon equation gets that deep on 19 different attributes. And so far, it's proven itself out to be semi-correct with willpower and the Powerverse.
And the Powerverse. So we have willpower, and you have quite a few adventures that people can pick up right away. Now that the Powerverse is coming into creation, what other types of heroes can we expect to see creeping in? I can see, like I said before, from your store. I was excited to see that you had Purge on there. But who else should we expect to see creeping into some of your stories now that the Powerverse is a thing?
Well, let me tell you first of what the Powerverse is. In issue one, I wanted everything to come back to the spider bite. That's another thing, icon equation, the spider bite. The spider bite for Willpower is issue one. It is his origin mythos. It's the creation of his mythology. And in the issue one, there's a matter density wave that shoots out into the universe and changes the density of all matter. But that wave travels, it continues to travel outward. It travels outward through space and time, and it hits all the realities of all the independent comic book universes. And it thins the density of the barriers that separates the independent market. And then those universes start to bleed into one universe, the Powerverse. And that's what the Powerverse is. The barriers that have separated the independent market is being torn down by the events that took place in issue one of The Legend of Willpower. So once again, thinking outside the box. And it unifies these disparate and vulcanized creators and characters into one multiverse. And with that being said, in and everyone, are welcome, is welcome in the Powerverse. And right off the bat, I can tell you what you will see. You'll see Purge, characters like the Brother, the Horseman, the Globalist. Oh gosh, Red Knight will dabble in there as well. Sea Ghost. There's a huge poster of all the characters from The Powers That Be. The Powers That Be is the first title. It's really The Legend of Willpower renumbered, retitled as The Powers That Be. But it becomes a team book on issue 7 or 8. I forget what it's called. But that's what The Powers That Be is. And it's like the Avengers title for The Powers. And there are a couple of new acquisitions as well. They call him Marvelous. Endgame. Fly Guy, Landshark. We have a couple of creators. Something called the Supercross from a creator in Singapore. So the universe is starting to spread, expand. And it's going to be a very interesting attempt to make this all work. And we've already, you know, we're busy in our chats making things happen, developing storylines and getting the books lined up. So there'll be more to come for sure. And hopefully it'll be received very well.
And how has working with the different creators been? I mean, the one thing I can always see when listening to interviews from big market creators versus the indie guys' passion is outside of any boundary. You know, you always get the guys that's, you know, in the industry and they're like, yes, this is going to be a great episode of such and such or a great issue of such and such. And they just sound so, it sounds like they're reading a byline. But when you talk to the indie guys, it's like, you have got to listen to my concept on this because let me tell you, and there's fist pounding, there's animation there. You can tell in the look on their face when they're straining for the right words because they're used to writing things down versus speaking things out.
Yeah. What to say next?
Right. So how has working with the indie creators been?
It's been amazing, man. The fact that everybody's so different, I wanted that. You know, one of my inspirations for this was Image and Milestone. In fact, that's why I sort of label this as the Powerverse. It's like Image meets Milestone. Image being that there's all these independent creators who own their own creations and IPs who are all in one universe sharing this unifying brand. And the Milestone being that it's diverse, you know. Will's an African American hero, but the other titles have characters who are Vietnamese, Irish, Asian, white, all types of different colors and all types of different stories. And I mean, it's really the real world. And I always thought too, like, especially in the United States, if there were going to be superheroes, at least anybody with powers who escape from any type of facility, they're probably going to be people of color because you know, they're going to be and the poor, because it's the same thing with the military, because you have a lot of people seeking opportunity, who are looking for different avenues and ways to break the paradigm that they're in, and the military is normally that lifeline. And if you're going to then take it one step further and see if you're going to experiment upon these people and everything else, you're going to see heroes or secret heroes that run the gambit of the nationalities from all different backgrounds and countries. And I think that's more realistic, to tell you the truth. I think that working with all these different people and creators, the challenge that it has and that is built in, I welcome it. And I think we're all learning from that process. And I think the reader, when you see diversity created from a true passion, it doesn't come across as something that's false or that's contrived. You know, when you see ethnicity injected into like Marvel and DC, when they take characters that we've known for a long time and maybe they rebrand them through ethnicity, when you see them rebrand them that way, sometimes it doesn't ring true. And when you see brand new characters who are created, and they were all created initially to be whatever demographic they are, it sort of rings true. And I just welcome that whole process of working with different people and creating different characters.
And I think
was that too corporate?
No, not at all. But I was going to say that I think that's why the indie market, especially on platforms like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and stuff like that, is seeing such success now, because they're because people are tired of, well, we have African American Iron Man, and now we have Asian Iron Man. And if you look at like books like, what is it, Batman Incorporated, they have a Batman in every country.
Why can't you create something new?
Yes. And you know? I mean, and I got to tell you, the you know, going back to things of like an icon, one of the first things that most people notice when they look at a superhero is the emblem. And I noticed when I first saw Will Power and the character, that emblem is, it's really iconic. I mean, you can tell it's supposed to be a fist, but I mean, even still, it's simple. It's powerful. It's for people who are into the character, it's easy to replicate. Like, you know, back in the day when we were, you know, before iPads and stuff like that, you would draw all these logos on your book covers and stuff like that, right? So,
that's a part of the icon equation as well. It's really four parts, but I wrap it up in something called spell, S-P-E-L. And if you look at all the iconic characters, they all have this in common. S stands for simple name. You want your grandmother to know the name of your character. And she does not know Galactus, but she knows Superman. And she knows Spider-Man. The more complicated your name, the less likely it will roll off of someone's tongue. Or that they can remember it. So, you know, when you have your guys like, my character's name Gilgamesh Shangadar, well, that's great, dude. That's awesome. You know, they are taking themselves from an icon status. It doesn't mean their character's not great, but they're taking themselves out of the iconic level of a character. It might be a great concept. It might even become a movie one day, but would it last in the American tapestry for 60 or 70 years? It might not. Okay. So the next one is P, SP, primary colors. All of your most iconic characters are in primary colors. Your primary colors are red, yellow, and blue. They're primary because they make up all the other colors. Your mind remembers those colors the most. They're most memorable. They're like your base colors. I think even the rods in your eyes are based off of red, yellow, and blue. Shoot, our screens are RGB or something like that, red, blue, and green or something like that. So once you look at Superman, he's red, he's blue, red cape, yellow emblem. Wonder Woman, red, blue, and yellow. Spider-Man, red and blue. And when people ask me about Batman, I said, well, Batman, you know, you're always going to have outliers. But I say this, Batman was around, he was an okay character. But when Neil Adams took him and made his costume, changed it from black and gray to blue with the yellow bat symbol, that's when he took off. He became everywhere. In fact, he became very commercial, very marketable. And, you know, you got the television show and all this stuff, you know, and it's probably the best run of Batman since then. And once your character becomes really iconic, you can change them up any type of way after that, you know. So SP, E, easy to draw. You're talking about willpower symbol. He has to be easy to draw so that when we're kids, we want to draw the characters. And how many kids did you hear say, I'm not going to draw him because he's too complicated. I don't think I can draw him. And then you want them to sit there and draw that character day after day and just burn that image in their brain. So when they're adults and they're making, you know, 70, 80, 90K a year, they have a lot of money to come pay you, buy your book. Well, you know, all right. So, and then last is L, S-P-E-L, spell, logo. All the iconic characters have them. You can say it's cheesy and hokey. You can make these anti-heroes all you want. But your grandmother, your mother, your cousin, and people that don't read comics will not know your character's name. And they will not become a part of the American lexicon. They just won't. So if you know, if there's the icon equation, I think it may not be rocket science, but when you read all 19, it will make a lot of sense, and you will see that, especially in the indie market, we don't do those things at all. But we're going to do them in the Powerverse. Trust me.
Nice. So obviously, if people want to pick up some of your books, check out Willpower. You have a free primer online that people can check out and start to dip their toe into the massive waters that is the Powerverse. But what's coming next? So we have multiple issues of Willpower. We have some shirts. You can get the icon equation right on there. In fact, I've been I need to order this Legend of Willpower Power Industry shirt when I get a chance.
There's Robo One, the Action Pack. It used to be called God Cell, but it's been relabeled to the Spin Doctor's Shadow 6. And that's already online. Dynamo Azan will be coming later this year. Something called Blackout, starring Purge and the Brother, will be coming. Endgame will be up there soon. The Globalist is already there. That's really cool. It's like an interdimensional League of Nations that conquers realities. What else is there? Robo One, already said. Dynamo Azan, Endgame, Scrum, American Dreams will be coming. So there's a lot of stuff coming out. The Liberty and Justice for All, that's another great title that's coming out. And so nice. There'll be a lot coming. Yeah.
So when can we hope to see the first issue of Powerverse? I know Kickstarter backers will start seeing stuff hit our emails, but when can the general public hope to start seeing stuff?
The money just hit my account today. And right on. So the book one is basically done. Book two is penciled out. This was for the powers that be. And what has to be done for book one is there were Kickstarter cameo appearances. And so I really had to wait until all the money was in to see who's actually in the book. You know, you get that, man, I dropped $200 on that. You know I'm in. Then when the Kickstarter ends, I don't know what happened, man. It hit my account. It wasn't there. So I had to wait till today. And that happens. I understand. There's no hard feelings there to all those who couldn't. But I had to wait for that today. And I'm estimating it's going to take me probably 3 weeks to get the artwork done for that. We're going to letter it, have all the editors take a look at it, run through it 3 or 4 times, making sure it's perfect. And then we're going to start seeing that release. And the card game as well, the Powerverse crossplay, that's looking really cool. And also looking at all that stuff, about 3 weeks, you're going to see a steady flow starting to come out, and you're going to see the announcement of something new very soon thereafter, of the new thing from Powerverse.
Sweet. Hey, can you talk about the card game a little bit? Because I might have wormed my way into a sneak peek of an image or two, but yeah. Which, let me tell you, the cards look tight. The cards look super tight.
Well, you know, I'm an older gentleman. You know, I'm 45 this year, and I never got the concept of cards. I thought they were kind of crazy. But I see kids playing them, you know. I'm like, yeah, these guys are playing, you know, kids, adults, grown men, you know. And someone sent me a link where I could download a Pokemon game. So it was a Pokemon game with cards, and you can play online. And I started playing it, and I realized, man, okay, this is kind of cool. I like the concept of it. And Will is sort of like an all ages book, and I really, adults can read it and enjoy it, but it is made so everyone can read it, even younger readers. And I really want to promote younger readers. So the card game is sort of designed so anyone can play it, especially young players can play it. But it's a combination of the old Marvel collectible cards, you know, which were really cool. I can sit and look at those all day. You learn about the characters a little bit, not a lot, but just enough to say, oh, that's really cool. And the gameplay is very simple. It's going to be a mixture of, at the moment, because we're still making some tweaks at the last moment. I'm pushing it till the 3 weeks, because the person that's creating is printing the cards, you know, their turnaround is pretty quick. So I'm going to wait till I finish the book and then send in the final files for the cards. But at the moment, it's like a mix between Pokemon and your classic RPG, Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that of the day. So there's actual role play, but with cards. And so I think people are going to like it. It's a little different than what's out there, but it looks crisp, clean. You know, my background is in graphic design, so I want everything to look, you know, look pretty mainstream and crisp and clean. So they look pretty cool.
Right on. So if people want to stalk you on social media and look into what you got going on and see the day to day and kind of get an inside track, what's a great place to find you?
Willpower Comic. Once you go to Willpower Comic, it links to everything. The Facebook page, there's a contact us page there. I'm an open book. My phone number is online. People can call me, contact me. The Twitter account's there. And there is a slow library, but growing, on our Powerverse YouTube channel of videos, starting to just slowly explain the Powerverse. And we hope to launch a video, a Powerverse news as well. So there'll be updates and things like that via the YouTube. So it's all baby steps. You know, I'm trying to get all these guys and all these different, I'm herding the sheep, all these different avenues and trying to and mediums and trying to make all this happen. But it's coming together. It's coming slowly but surely.
Right on. So as we're rounding out the bottom of the hour, and we've covered a lot of subjects. I highly suggest everybody go and pick up the Icon Equation as well as check out the first issue of Willpower. Seriously, if you love superheroes and you want a great starting origin that is not cookie cutter, that first issue was just like a breath of fresh air. Fantastically done. Please go check that out. But is there anything else that you'd like to throw out there into the interwebs that you would like people to know?
Yes, with the emerging television and movie markets that Marvel and DC are building and doing well in, I will tell everyone, support your independent comic book creators. Those guys have, if the big guys, they already have a new vehicle in which they can generate revenue. That's the movies and stuff like that. Their characters have been around for 50, 60, and some 70 years. It's time to support and back your independent creators. And let's make nostalgia and bring nostalgia back and create new heroes for a new generation. So that's what I really want to say.
Right on. Hey, thank you so much for coming out and talking to us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing your time and sharing Willpower. I mean, like I said, when I saw that origin story, I'm like, finally, something new and fresh. This is amazing. So we really appreciate your time. And thank you again for your service, for serving your country, and giving back to the American mythology. It's fantastic.
That's right, man. Hey, thank you. Until next time, be powerful.